Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889, and by French Market Coffee, locally roasted in New Orleans for 125 years. From our studios in the Southern Food and Beverage Museum in New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's Mardi Gras time in Louisiana, and we're ready for the party. We begin the celebration with Napa Valley vintners Susan and Dwayne Hoff, who are being honored this year as King and Queen of Mid-City. We'll learn all about how they came to receive that honor, and then we'll visit with Brian Batt and his partner, Tom Cianfici, to learn how they celebrate Mardi Gras in New Orleans. Finally, Tim Traplin gives us his personal view of Mardi Gras as an artist of the realm. From ball invitations to Rex proclamations, Tim has done it all. He'll give us a behind-the-scenes glimpse of the artistry and design that goes into making Mardi Gras magical. So without further ado, let's get the carnival party rolling on this week's Louisiana Eats. Mardi Gras we locals know and love is often eclipsed by stereotypes held by many outside of Louisiana. That's why it's always wonderful to meet Mardi Gras converts who make an annual pilgrimage to the Crescent City during carnival season. This year, I met a couple who has not only been converted, they've been crowned. Mardi Gras royalty, that is.
I'm Dwayne Hoff. I'm the owner of Fantesca Estate and Winery in Napa Valley. And I am king of Mardi Gras this year for the crew of Mid-City.
I am Susan Hoff. I am the proprietress at Fantesca Estate and Winery. I also am a WBFF fitness pro. And I am reigning as the queen of the crew of Mid-City in 2017. And I'm so excited.
I had the regal opportunity to visit with Dwayne and Susan as they prepared to take their crowns as the king and queen of the crew of Mid-City. To start, I asked Dwayne and Susan how two Minnesotans became part of this very local crew.
Years ago, we met a gentleman named Jared Brode, and our friend Jared was a crisis communications trainer. And he's from New Orleans, and we struck up a friendship, and in 2001, Jared served as the king of the crew of Mid-City, and he invited us to come down and experience Mardi Gras. And we had a lot of the same misconceptions, I think, a lot of people who aren't from Louisiana have about Mardi Gras. We thought it was just a big bash with a lot of alcohol, which isn't necessarily a bad thing either.
But lewdity and all sorts of horrible things, but it's not really like that at all, is it?
Well, no, and that first year we were really struck by how it's really a community celebration, and it's really about families, and we had such a good time, it became a tradition of ours. So we've been coming down here for about 15 years for Mardi Gras, and this year we were asked to serve as king and queen, and we eagerly accepted.
When we came down to visit, we didn't know what to expect from Mardi Gras. He just said, listen, you need to understand it's the traditional way we celebrate Mardi Gras. There is a ball, there is a stroll, there is a parade. So you need to come down, be prepared, bring your ball gown, bring your gloves, bring your beautiful high heels, and then bring your sweats, bring your workout clothes, because you're going to be wearing those on the float underneath your costume. And I said, oh, okay, so we come down 2001, and the next thing we know it, we are being presented in front of the king for all of the work that I had done at Best Buy, where I had worked, and I was the chief communications officer there. And I also had started the Best Buy Children's Foundation, so all of the millions of dollars that we had donated over the many years, we were honored for in front of the king. Here I am curtsying in a very long ball gown, and I was like, wow, I wish I would have known, because I don't think I've done that ever.
So no. You didn't know the curtsy?
No, I didn't know the curtsy. I was like, okay, I've done like the little barbell and dumbbell curtsies, but I have never curtsied in a full-out ball gown. I was like, wow, this is a little bit of work, and this is kind of really amazing. It's almost like being in an adult fairy tale. It's like Disneyland for adults, where here you are dressed up in these beautiful gowns, men are in their tuxes, you're dancing till 2-3 in the morning, and then you get up the next day and you do something else just as incredible. And it's really not about all the lewdity and this is the only way you can get beads and all the other things that unfortunately you see on television or hear about on the radio. It's an event steeped in tradition, and we are the 84th king and queen of this incredible crew.
Yeah, Mid-City started as a community group out of Mid-City. At its core, it's from a working class community, and so the theme of Mid-City is pour la joie de vie, for the joy of life. So they really do things in a very festive and fun way and make it very accessible for people to just have a great time.
So tell me about your experience of riding a float. When did you first ride, and how did that go for you?
Well, that first year, they're telling me how many beads I need, and it seemed like an astronomical number of beads. Like, how could I possibly need that much?
And you have a little bit of a frugal side to you.
Any good Norwegian boy from northern Minnesota is gonna, count his pennies a little bit. And so that first year I was like, well, I gotta make sure I don't have too much. And when you're on the float and you see all those people and you make that eye connection with people, you just wanna give them joy. And so it's such a fun thing. And then what I learned that first year was that the real key was to make sure that you get plenty of stuffed animals and little footballs to throw to the kids, because their eyes just light up like Christmas morning. One of my friends, the best way he can describe it when he's trying to explain to people why you would want to ride with a crew or why you would want to ride with Mid-City is you're going to make 100,000 people smile today. And I thought that was a great way of putting it.
It is a great way. And tell me, they must have prepared you now. What is the actual day of the parade going to be like for your majesties?
So I think one of the things that's interesting about that is that when I've ridden with the crew, it's about the throws. And when you're the king of Mid-City, you have a scepter in one hand and a chalice in the other, and you're supposed to wave to the crowd with your scepter. So it's a different experience. Instead of making that kind of connection where you're doing it with throws, you're actually doing it with your reign as the king of Mid-City. And I actually had a hard time kind of wrapping my head around the idea of being the sovereign ruler, so to speak, of Mid-City. But I think it's kind of helpful for me anyways to think about it in the same context as being Santa at the Christmas party. Somebody has to be Santa, and it's really important that Santa's at the party.
What's going to be in the chalice, Your Majesty?
Air.
Oh, as a winemaker, that must be a bit of a disappointment.
Well, it's a 3.5 hour parade, and there's no porta potty on the king's float, so I'm going to be a very good boy that day.
So tell me about your crowns and what's on them.
Not only are you creating this crown, obviously it's probably the most significant memento that you'll have from the experience of being king and queen of Mardi Gras. And so Mr. Tommy at Dynasty goes to great lengths to talk to you about what kinds of things are important to you and what you want represented on to personalize the back of your crown. And he very quickly moves past, you can't just put things on there about your wife and your kids. You need to have some things that have some personality to them. So you can only put a handful of things that really defined you. What do you end up putting on the crown? So the first thing on my crown is actually my wife's nickname. So her name is Susan. So when we were just dating in college, it was Susie Q. So there's a little Q on the crown for her. And then she picked out, I'm Norwegian, so she picked out a Viking symbol just as kind of something that would be a fun piece for me. the only time you're ever going to see my initials in diamonds, or in this case, rhinestones, is on the back of the crown. And then our two children, one, her nickname is Peanut, so there's a little Peanut to remind me of her. And our son, the scientist, so there's a little rocket ship to remind me of Taylor. And then other things that were really important to us. There's a Future Farmers of America emblem.
Why Future Farmers of America?
You know, I was involved with Future Farmers of America as a high school kid, and I am very involved with that back home. You know, it's opportunities to teach kids about leadership and to teach them public speaking and to teach them personal responsibility. So it's a great organization.
That's wonderful. And what sort of little mementos are on your crown like that, Your Majesty?
In the back of my crown is a heart with a 29, which is our 29th wedding anniversary, which is this year. So we chose the opportunity to be king and queen this year to celebrate with friends and family from all the coasts and the Midwest, come down for a party that everybody's having. There is a Best Buy gold tag. I worked at Best Buy for 30 years, and very big part of my life. I was very fortunate to learn as the company grew. There's also a barbell, because I am a bodybuilder, a lightweight bodybuilder, and I do pro shows around the world. And then another one way on the side of my crown, and it's the only thing that's like dangly on my crown, is the Fantesca charm. It's a wine charm that symbolizes the business that my husband and I built together.
Well, congratulations, Your Majesties. I look forward to seeing you on the parade route during your reign, and I wish you many, many, many happy returns of the 29th and 30th anniversaries.
Thank you, Poppy.
Thank you so much.
The 2017 King and Queen of the Crew of Mid-City, Dwayne and Susan Hall. One of the many awe-inspiring parts of Carnival are the exquisite costumes that revelers labor over year-round to premiere on Fat Tuesday morning. My friends and veteran thespians Brian Batt and Tom Cianfici share my love of costume culture, so we had a little chat about what they look forward to every year at Mardi Gras. Tom and Brian, I am so curious to hear about Mardi Gras in your life. What do you all do when it's Mardi Gras time?
Run.
No, I'm kidding.
run to St. Charles to watch a parade.
Costume is a must.
Oh, God. Yes.
You cannot walk out the door on Mardi Gras day without a costume.
No, I'm a firm believer. None of this purple, green, and gold rugby shirts. That's lame. You've got to get a hat.
Or a rainbow clown wig.
Yeah, no, that doesn't count. No. But it really is fun. It's, you know, this is the day that you can just
be as creative as you want to be.
Funny and whatever you want.
Anything goes.
Yeah, anything goes. Let your inhibitions run wild. Or if there's something you always wanted to be or dress up as or play at, do it. That's what it's for. And no one, you know, there's no judgment. That's what I love about it. You know, that's fun. We used to live on the parade route, literally on the parade route.
You never know how many friends you have until you live on the parade route.
It's so true.
That's the truth.
How coveted a bathroom is.
I think that you know, people outside of Louisiana get the wrong idea about what Mardi Gras really is.
Mm-hmm. And Sadly, they do.
And uptown, it's such a family.
Yeah, it really is a family tradition.
And, you know, I don't think people realize that.
That's why I tell everyone to go watch it. You know, go on St. Charles, around Napoleon St. Charles, and further down too. You know, and a lot of people on the Bourbon Street, that's a different crowd. You know, I don't bring the kids there, but everyone has their place, you know, where they prefer to watch the parade, you know, and the celebration. And that's what I love about it. It's for everyone. And there's nothing like it anywhere else.
Well, I'm an uptown girl who always was a St. Charles Avenue parade watcher. Mm-hmm. But I must confess that on Mardi Gras Day, I'm inextricably drawn to the Marigny.
Yes, we've done it.
I got to go.
I wasn't there. And he called. And where was I? I was doing some talk somewhere, and Tom goes, "You are not going to believe these costumes. You're not going to believe these costumes. They're brilliant. What do they do? They work all year round for these magnificent."
Yeah, I worked forever on mine, and I thought I was going to stand out. I was like, "Oh God, you're boring."
And you were the Sun King.
I was Louis the 14th as the Sun King.
Yeah, I mean, it was this historically accurate, gorgeous, you know, gilded, fantastical
costume.
You know, and then you paled in comparison to the rest. But what was that when you walked by and someone was getting married on a stoop?
Oh, yeah. Somebody just decided to get married, and there was somebody there who could do it, and they just did.
And everyone, on all the people in costume, really? were their wedding party.
Oh, it's so wonderful.
You know, how magical. You know, what we need in this life and in this world, especially now more than ever, and you can always say that, is a little more magic.
Exactly. And we have our magic to look forward to every year. Well, thank you. Thanks so much for talking all this holiday fun. Oh, thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Right back at you.
Tom Cianfici and Brian Batt. Jello shots are possibly the perfect Mardi Gras libation. While a brandy milk punch is an essential cocktail on the neutral ground Mardi Gras morning, after a while, you run the risk of spilling. Jello shots won't spill, and they can be made in the traditional Mardi Gras colors of purple, green, and gold. Take my advice. A tray of Jello shots will make you the most popular person on the parade route. Here are my secrets for making perfect Jello shots. First, you need to acquire the right containers, those little pleated paper souffle cups. Nothing else is soft enough to squeeze out the shot properly when it's time for toasting. Anyone can buy a box of them at local restaurant supply stores. Next, buy a fifth of Everclear and a fifth of inexpensive vodka. Save the good stuff for the martinis. Refer to the speed set method on the side of the Jell-O box and completely dissolve the Jell-O in 3/4 cup of boiling water. In a heat-proof measuring cup, combine 1/2 cup of vodka and 1/2 cup of Everclear. Add enough ice cubes to increase the volume to a total of 1 1/4 cups, then stir in the dissolved gelatin. Keep stirring until the ice cubes melt, then pour into the souffle cups and refrigerate until solid. Now you're ready to roll. I love to stroll down the avenue with a basket of Jell-O shots on my arm. You won't believe how many new friends you'll make. I'm Poppy Tooker, and purple, green, and gold Jell-O shots are real Louisiana eat. When we come back from a short break, we'll visit with Tim Traplin, who also has the distinction of being the Rex Carnival Organization's Artist of the Realm. Stay tuned. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Rouse's Markets and from Brennan's Restaurant. Breakfast at Brennan's, featuring Chef Slade Rushing's updated classic Creole cuisine. Breakfast, lunch, dinner, and private events at 417 Royal Street in the historic French Quarter. Creating the beauty and majesty of Mardi Gras is a year-round event for many. When the King of Carnival, His Majesty Rex, is involved, it really ups the game. No one knows more about the behind-the-scenes artistry that makes each year's event special than Tim Traplin, who has the distinction of being my cousin, and also the Rex Artist of the Realm.
I'm Tim Traplin. I'm a New Orleans artist, and I was fortunate enough to be one of the Rex artists.
An artist to the realm, because of course on that one magical day a year, Rex rules the city of New Orleans, and even the mayor hands the city over to the rule and misrule of Carnival Day.
That's right.
Tim, how in the world do you become one of the artists to the realm?
Well, I think, first of all, a lot of it has to do with luck or being in the right place at the right time. I was very fortunate that I was invited. You're invited by the Rex organization to do a proclamation or an invitation or the Rex scarf. But I think it's a wonderful honor as an artist to represent, to me, the essence of Mardi Gras. It's like reducing the sauce of Mardi Gras to Rex. Ever since I was little, Rex has been my favorite part of Mardi Gras.
When did it first inspire you?
When I was a little bitty boy, 4 years old, and standing on St. Charles Avenue, waiting to hear the music, the drums, looking way down the avenue, and you could see in the distance, he's coming, Rex is coming. And so to be a small part of that was such a wonderful dream come true. It's like a boyhood's dream.
Well, you know, I think it's very important that people understand the Rex Proclamation, which many folks, as I do, have framed in their home.
Thank you.
The Rex Proclamation isn't a poster, is it?
No, Rex proclaims Mardi Gras. Rex is the center stone of Mardi Gras. It is Rex himself who says, I proclaim that this is Mardi Gras Day, and care and misrule, you know, the city will go without care on that day. So I think that the proclamation is the illustration of the demand that Rex makes of his subjects to have fun and put care aside for the last day of revelry.
When you go about designing something like that, what inspires you? What do you think of? I have to say, we'll spill the beans. You know, most everybody knows I'm one of your cousins. Of course, being a cousin of Tim Traplin is I'm one of a legion. Those big Catholic families.
We got a lot of them, and I love them all.
However, one of the things that really struck me was on your proclamation, and you'll have to remind me what year. I remember when you were working on it in your studio, and you showed me the photographs of some of our Dumestri cousins.
That's right.
Who inspired the design.
Yeah. Well, the first one I did was in 2004, and it was all about winged magical creatures. And so I needed some models to be fairies and enchantresses. So I called on two of our very many cousins to come, and they were Isadora Duncan dancers. So they were scantily clad but modest, and they did all these wonderful poses that I used in that first proclamation. Oh, it was fun.
Oh, I'm sure that was, well, everything about you is fun, Tim.
Thank you. I love you.
And then doing the proclamation is very different from designing the traditional Rex invitation. Tell me about the guidelines or the expectations when it comes to the invitation.
The proclamation has to have a connection with the theme. of the parade every year. And as you know, and all of us in New Orleans know, the day after Mardi Gras, they begin designing the next parade around the next theme. And it's really well done and well thought out. So once they give you the theme, they gave me artistic license, but within the boundaries, of course, of always mentioning Rex proclaims the Mardi Gras by himself, Rex himself, which has to be on it. Of course, you can't have Mardi Gras Day without Rex. But also, what I loved the most was Pro Bono Publico, because that's truly what I love most of all about Rex. And that's why every year now they invite a different artist to do a proclamation or the invitation or the Rex scarf, so that the public, it's part of the public good, sharing the wealth of the city with the artists who, you know, thrive here. This is an art center, as we know.
I would suspect that although many people, by visiting museums, by looking at Louisiana State Museum collections, are aware of ball favors and what they look like. However, I would say that the scarf that Rex does is quite different from everything else. Do they do one every year?
I think so, and it's the most ephemeral because they're all done on silk, as you know, and unless you keep them in a box in a drawer, if you wear it and enjoy it and use it, well, with wear and tear, they're not permanent. They won't be the most lasting. And I think that is part of the beauty of the scarf.
Well, mine is going to be lasting and permanent, at least one of mine, of the several that you designed. And that's the one that you did for that unforgettable, very personal, very private, in many ways, Mardi Gras that we had here in 2006, the year after Katrina, when there could have possibly been no Mardi Gras at all. Tell us about that special year for you and how you set out to design that special scarf.
Well, first of all, I knew the scarf had to be a celebration not only of the life of New Orleans, but the life of Mardi Gras, which is, to me, the heartbeat of our city. We love Christmas, we love Easter, we love All Saints' Day, Halloween, but Mardi Gras is the part that pumps the energy of our city. So I wanted it to reflect the many aspects of the city, its artists, the scenic beauty of the city. And so I did a circle within the square. And the colors I thought were very beautiful. I sort of used Hermes colors. They make the most beautiful scarves, artistically beautiful. So I used that sort of color tones, and it was really more of a celebration of the renewed life and spirit of New Orleans through that Mardi Gras.
I love my scarf. To be perfectly honest with you, it hangs within sight of my bed. So it's the very first thing I see in the morning, which reminds me of where I am and how lucky I am to live in this city.
You're right.
And so I look at that scarf a lot. Well, Tim, you bring such joy and life to us all in the city of New Orleans. Thank you so much for pulling back that secret, mysterious curtain of the Insider Carnival and giving us a glimpse of what it might be like to be an artist to the
Thank
realm.
Thank you. And just remember, we will always never cease to love if ever I cease to love.
I love you.
Thank you, Tim.
New Orleanian and artist, Tim Traplin.
In a house, in a square, in a quadrant, in a street, in the lane, in the road. Turn to the left, on the right hand, you see there is my true love's abode.
In a city where it's not unusual to dine in century-old establishments, Toujek's restaurant holds a special place. Founded in 1856 by Guillaume Toujac, it's officially the second oldest restaurant in the city. Like Antoine's, they have their own crew room, too. Owner and proprietor Mark Ladder tells us the story of how the crew d'etat room came to be.
So they were having a dictator's meeting in Antoine's in the Proteus room, and they decided they wanted their own room. They had known my father, Stephen, for years, and some of the previous dictators, and like, let's go to Toujac's. And so they came to Toujac's, they talked to my father, and it was done. Now they have the crew d'etat room at Toujac's restaurant.
And this isn't a very old crew. About how long have they been around?
They formed in 1996.
In 1996.
So they're just a baby.
Well, they're just babies, but the truth be told, even though, you know, these crews have such secrecy and, you know, the maskers on the floats, they have to keep their masks on. And even at the Mardi Gras balls, when you dance with a masker, theoretically, you're not supposed to know who that is who gives you the Mardi Gras ball favor. The truth is, that it's rumored that a lot of the crew d'etat members are actually families that previously belonged to some of the really old Mardi Gras crews that don't parade anymore, like Comus, for instance.
I would think so. There's a lot of the members of crew d'etat are very much involved in the city of New Orleans.
Big Mardi Gras folks, huh? So your father said yes, and they began to have their events here. What are the events that go on?
So they started with a small room by the balcony upstairs, and they would just have float meetings. And then once my father passed away and we decided to renovate the upstairs, they decided they wanted our big room so they could have their dictatorship meetings here. We pretty much gutted the room, and then they decorated themselves. There's their logos everywhere. They have brand new tile on the fireplace. They even have a shadow box with a lot of the giveaways and pins and other things that involve the crew. So the entire room is decorated by the crew.
Do you expect the crews to expand here, or have other people approached you?
Other crews have approached us about other rooms. I guess they get the idea from Antoine's and then coming into the crew d'etat room, but we've limited it just to the crew d'etat room.
So what goes on at these dictator dinners?
So the dictator meetings are pretty mysterious. Basically, they come upstairs, everyone grabs a cocktail, and then they ask our staff and all members of Toujac's to go downstairs. They have like a secret ceremony where they sacrifice a lamb or something. And then about an hour into their dictator's meeting, they allow a staff to come back upstairs. They have dinner and more cocktails.
I hear that sometimes there are some ladies who attend these events.
I don't ever recall seeing the ladies come upstairs, but, you know, there's rumors that, you know, they come through the back stairs.
I see. And I hear that some of these women could be scantily clad and perhaps perform.
I have no recollection of any of that happening. These are tame, distinguished gentlemen having a drink for dinner and dinner.
Do they have any sort of dining and drinking ritual? What do they want when they come to Toujac's?
So they want the old traditional menu that my father had at the restaurant, the five-course meal, and they really enjoy the chicken bonfim. Basically, they have the remoulade, the gumbo, the brisket appetizer, and then everybody gets garlic chicken.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yummy. It's so delicious. And nobody wants to kiss you too much after you have the chicken bonfim. You have to bring a little piece home to your wife or something, I think. Mark, what does it mean to you personally to have this crew have such an affinity and an attachment to your restaurant?
It means a lot to me because I have a lot of friends and neighbors that are involved in crew d'etat, and it sits close to home, and it's fun to know that you have, you know, this crew. They talk about us as much as we talk about them. You know, go check out the crew d'etat room at Toujac's. We'll have people come in from out of town. My uncle's in crew d'etat. Can I see the room upstairs?
So the room stays the same all year round, huh?
All year round. Christmas Day, rehearsal dinners, weddings. It's become an attraction, so we definitely want to keep the room looking the way it does now.
Well, there's a lot of very beautiful and entertaining things to see in here. And, of course, every year they put out those parade flyers that tell the name of every float. And you look at one of those, they're all hanging all over the walls here, and you can really get their sense of humor. They're so satirical, often very political, taking jabs at no one is exempt from that, are they?
No, not at all. If there are two parades that I would suggest someone from out of town coming to watch, it's not the big guys and Damien and Bacchus. It's Crew de Vue and Cru d'Etat, because they'll teach you the most about the city of New Orleans. What's going on at that moment in New Orleans?
Well, I am so thrilled that you welcomed us into the Cru d'Etat room here at Toujek's restaurant, and we'll be coming back. I know there's a lot more things that our Louisiana Eats listeners can learn about the history and the wonderful special place that Toujek's is here on the corner of Madison and Decatur Street. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Poppy. Great to see you.
Mark Ladder of Toujek's Restaurant. Why are most king cakes decorated with purple, green, and gold sugars? Stay tuned, and we'll answer that question when we come right back. Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Louisiana Eats is brought to you with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, and from French Market Coffee. French Market Coffee's premium blend beans are locally roasted in small batches, creating a coffee that can only be called New Orleans Bold. Here's this week's culinary quiz question, brought to you with support from Popeye's Louisiana Culinary Institute. Why are most king cakes decorated with purple, green, and gold sugars? Although the tradition of Mardi Gras king cakes are an early French import, the colors purple, green, and gold were not used in conjunction with Mardi Gras until 1872, when Russian Grand Duke Alexis Alexandrovich Romanov came to New Orleans to celebrate the holiday. In honor of the visit, Rex, the King of Carnival, dedicated the colors of the Grand Duke's insignia as Mardi Gras' official colors. Purple stands for justice, green for faith, and gold for power. 20 years later, in 1892, this tradition was reaffirmed when the Rex Parade theme was Symbolism of Colors. I'm Poppy Tooker. Happy Mardi Gras, and please, pass the king cake. Bartender and spirits consultant Max Messier spent much of his career creating remarkable cocktail programs in high-profile bars and restaurants across the country. In his spare time, Max was creating new and innovative syrups, cordials, and tea concentrates designed to make the bartender's job easier. Now living in New Orleans, Max has founded Cocktail & Sons, a company that produces a line of all-natural and handcrafted syrups using South Louisiana ingredients. We spoke with Max about his move into the syrups business and about a special blend he created for carnival season, a king cake flavored syrup.
So I made bitters back in 08, 09. Made some crazy stuff. But I found that the bitters market over the past couple of years, there's a lot of bitters. There's a place in Los Angeles called Barkeeper. They have a wall of bitters. There's so many of them. And there's guys making bitters out of Oklahoma City now. It's everywhere. I've always been more fascinated by syrups because I felt that the syrups better complemented the spirits themselves and they act as a modifier, whereas bitters are only accents or tinctures. And I've always worked with different types of sugars in my syrups, and I've always found the viscosity and the texture of those syrups from Thai palm sugar, or just there's a whole range of different syrups, different sugars, and I always liked playing around with different types.
That is one of the very fascinating things about your product, the viscosity of it. It's, I guess I could compare it to honey or maple syrup. It's got a slow drip to it, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And one thing that I find with syrups that I made, that I used to use gum arabic. And down here in Louisiana, which people aren't really aware of outside of the state, we have a lot of sugar here. So I found my sugar guy, which is Bob Romero from Three Brothers out of he's outside Lafayette. And when I first started buying his stuff, he's sourcing a lot of the restaurants and bars in New Orleans. And I asked him, I said, "Bob, I love your sugar, but it's too refined. I need something even more raw, more unscrubbed." And he was like, "Okay." So he actually produces for me a very special type of raw, unscrubbed sugar. There's actually big chunks of sugar, like dried sugarcane juice inside of the buckets. And when you tear open the top of the bucket during our processing days in the kitchen, it smells like you just cut down sugarcane, so fresh. So my wife, we've discussed about doing seasonals. We're going to have a lot of seasonals that are based upon New Orleans heritage and or historical references to the cocktail beverage world in general. So king cake syrup.
King cake syrup.
Yes. I made this very elaborate syrup. And my wife she tried it and she goes, "You know, it's just a cinnamon brioche, right? That's all it really is, what a king cake is." So I went back to the drawing board, did a couple more things, try to caramelize sugar, which you never want to do because it's such a delicate art. If you're trying to do a large batch, it's going to always fail. And went through like 6 or 7 different versions. And then finally my wife tried the last version, which is now in the bottle. And she goes, "Oh my God, you made a king cake.
King cake in a bottle.
In a bottle.
King cake in a bottle." And
so I've always been fascinated by the very small baby that's in the cake. I just think it's insane. Like, it just is. And now apparently they're putting them outside of the cake and all this other kind of like weird stuff.
Well, you know, all that litigation.
Yeah, all that stuff. But we decided to put the baby on the plastic ring outside the bottle. And we had discussed about what cocktail to put onto the actual label.
What cocktail recipe you would use?
A carnival punch, because we discovered that people during Mardi Gras, during carnival season, they like to just put everything into a bowl, take it with them, put it in a flask, put it into whatever type of container they have, and take it and watch the parades. So what you essentially need is a bottle of bourbon, rum, or vodka. You need about 3/4 cup of lemon juice. You need a bottle of king cake syrup, which is 8 ounces. You pour it all into a bowl, add some ice, and drink.
And you got a carnival party in a bowl,
that's
huh,
exactly
Max?
That's what it is, yep. And on the recipe, we say, lean against the barricades and enjoy the parades.
Okay, Max, luckily, right outside the studio door, we've got this absolutely awesome Rouse's Culinary Innovative Center. So here at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, we're ready for anything. I got the ice. I got the glasses. You've got the ingredients. What are we going to make?
Okay, so this is called a Night Tripper. I wanted to make a stirred cocktail with the king cake syrup. I love Negronis, so I always find that's the most classic style when you want to make a stirred drink. So what we have is we've got some bourbon. We got some dry vermouth, we've got the king cake syrup, and some orange bitters. So all we do is we just take 1.5 parts of bourbon, and then we're going to take 3/4 dry vermouth. I like using Dolin or Nolly Pratt. And then you're going to do 3/4 of the king cake syrup. This adds a nice sweetness.
Oh, it's a beautiful color, too.
Thank you so much. We roast cassia bark,
with pecan extract and lemon oil. And we do, and then we do a little bit of Regan's orange bitters right on top, two dashes. Add some ice, take our spoon, stir it up. You want to garnish it with either a lemon or an orange peel. You want to slice a little peel off and express it down below.
Or you could really have a party and just stick a king cake baby right in there, huh?
Yes, you could. take the baby off the bottle, throw it right into the glass.
Right into the glass. Okay.
Right there, this is called the Night Tripper, named after Dr. John. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, Max. Now, I have to say, not only is that the only king cake I've ever had in a glass, that's the best king cake I've ever had in a glass.
Thank you, Poppy.
Drink up. Happy
Cheers.
Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Wow. Tastes really, really. I think you must be a mad scientist. Tasting the syrup all by itself, you can even catch, like, the yeasty background of that brioche dough.
Yes, and that was the one challenge I wanted to cross off, was getting that yeasty, bready finish to it, because at the end of the day, it's pretty much a lovely cinnamon brioche. Like, I actually like it with the cream cheese, the fruit. It's really tasty. But I found if you have a king cake in your house, it only lasts for about half a day.
Oh, yeah, easy.
Easy.
King cake in the house, it hardly lasts a day. King cake is such a wonderful ritual for us here in Louisiana. And I have to think that aside from applications in the bar, you must be hearing from people who are doing all sorts of things with your syrups.
Yes, and that's what's really crazy is that at the farmer's market, we had a guy walk up and talk about how he loved the spiced demerara and he used it to marinate his pork.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
A woman was buying a bottle of the Oleo every week, and I was impressed because I thought she was making a lot of Collins cocktails at home. I discovered she was doing it for salad dressings with a little champagne vinegar. And a guy, she took the mint verbena syrup and soaked his lamb in it overnight, and he said it was amazing.
Max, thank you so much for telling us all about Cocktail & Sons. Congratulations on your success, and happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras.
Max Messier of Cocktail & Sons. That's it for this week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Tune in next week when we meet some of the South's greatest chefs, who are also obsessed with sports fishing.
Very profound and special for us. It allows us to escape all the worries of the day and the stress and we just get together and we pick up our fly rods and we find ourselves on bodies of water. The value and the importance of that is not really spoken but understood.
On Thursday, March the 23rd, Louisiana Eats is teaming up with French Market Coffee for our next celebrity chef dinner benefiting our home at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Join us for an evening of fun and fine dining as Chef Chris Montero of the Napoleon House prepares a three-course meal right before your very eyes with wines paired by Bin 428, a magazine wine shop in New Orleans. To see the evening's menu and buy tickets, visit my website, poppytooker.com. Have you missed an episode of Louisiana Eats? Hear today's show or catch up on previous editions anytime online at itsneworleans.com, where you can also subscribe to our podcast and take us with you wherever you go. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from Popeye's Louisiana Kitchen, Zatarain's, French Market Coffee, and Rouse's Markets. Additional support for Louisiana Eats is provided by the Shreveport-Bossier Convention and Tourist Bureau and by Dickie Brennan's Bourbon House. From oysters to redfish, serving fresh Gulf seafood on Bourbon Street. Original theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes. Big thanks to producers Joe Schreiner, Sarah Holtz, and Reggie Morris. come visit us anytime in our Louisiana Eat studios at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. I'm Poppy Tooker. Louisiana Eats is a production of Poppy Tooker Broadcasting.